everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, the title will explain everything for you. It is a podcast in which I talk about animation, specifically the latest news that has happened this week. So, for today's episode, we will start things off with Sony actually doing the very rare occurrence of doing something smart. Then we will look into the actual purpose of what Comcast wants to do with DreamWorks Animation. Then we will discuss about Ratchet & Clank and its box office performance and what it means for animated films with a very low budget. Then we will look into the release date of the Blu-ray of Only Yesterday. And finally, we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. Now, when it comes to Sony, yeah, there are so many instances that everybody can count on which, yeah, they have done some very stupid decisions, and I really do mean some stupid decisions. I could go on about just listing them, but I don't want this podcast to be 2 hours long, and we do have other stories to discuss. But it does happen, I will give them credit, that it does happen the very, very rare occasion that they will actually do something that seems intelligent. Now, there is actually the moment when they decided to retitle the Smurfs reboot from Get Smurfy to Smurfs the Lost Village. That was actually a good move of them. Then there was actually, well, this is more Sony Pictures, but they have announced that for the upcoming Spider-Man reboot, Spider-Man Homecoming, that they're going to give all the creative control to Marvel, which is actually very smart, considering that the writers that they have and the people in charge, they are not that great. In fact, they actually hired some of the worst writers in Hollywood. I don't know why, but what can you expect from Sony? But now they have made another smart move, which I was honestly surprised, but you know what? This actually makes me happy for Sony. And this is actually for the wage theft lawsuit. Apparently, Sony, representing both Sony Pictures Imageworks and Sony Pictures Animation, decided that they are going to settle the case. They want out, so they want to leave and make a little settlement. Now, this is very similar to what has previously been done with Blue Sky Studios, which was the first studio to get out of the case and make a settlement about it, but now Sony wants to be the next one to go out. In this case, the only difference that's going on is that apparently, where Blue Sky Studios has to pay about $6 million to settle the case, since Sony is representing two different companies, being Sony Pictures Imageworks and Sony Pictures Animation, they have to pay approximately $13 million. And the settlement will be happening at the same time as apparently it says, well, I'm checking from my article at Cartoon Brew, that they apparently will be settling at the same time in front of Judge Lucy Koh with Blue Sky Studios on June 16th. Now, first off, I just want to say congratulations to the people at Sony, both Sony Pictures Imageworks and Sony Pictures Animation, for making the right move and going for the animators and just settle with the case. They understand what they've done previously was wrong, so they decided that they want out, they want to settle, and, you know, they'll do it for their animators. That's finally good. And honestly, this is probably the first time that I heard that they're doing something good for their animators. Yeah, this is honestly quite the opposite of what you would expect from the Sony hacks. But anyways, yeah, this is definitely, no, but seriously, this is a great thing that Sony has done. Now, the question is that now that we got companies like Blue Sky and that we got Sony out of the case, what does this mean for the entire lawsuit? What does this mean? Well, Let's take a look, however, at the ones that are currently in the lawsuit, who are still in the game right now. We got DreamWorks Animation, and we got Disney, representing all the things that Disney has done, including Walt Disney Animation Studios, Pixar Animation Studios, and Lucasfilms. Basically, we're kind of back at the very beginning to when the case was first announced back in September. In September of 2014. But, you know, what I can imagine at this rate is that I wouldn't be surprised if sooner or later DreamWorks is going to announce that they're going to quit. Keep in mind, just last week there was the giant news that DreamWorks Animation has been purchased by Capcom. So I wouldn't be surprised if Capcom will look into the case and they decided they want nothing to do with it, and they're just gonna, you know, they're gonna make a settlement as well. They're gonna get themselves out of there, leaving the kingpins of all this being Disney. Since originally, if you look into the case, apparently the man in charge of all this was Pixar and Disney president, Disney Animation president, Ed Catmull. And that's the thing. I think it's going to be easy for DreamWorks to get out of this case, but Disney, I can imagine they're going to continue this until the very end. I don't know what's going on. Like, they're going to go and fight this from the very beginning. I'm not sure if Disney's going to go out and they will solve this problem by making a little settlement, but I know, like, DreamWorks, I there could be a good chance that they will. They certainly will at this point. In fact, it even says here in the Cartoon Brew article, what was once united from among the major studios in battling the lawsuit appears to be crumbling. As Deadline points out, and by the way, yes, Deadline was the first one to report this news, it would be particularly advantageous if DreamWorks Animation settled at this point too, because settlement would provide a regulatory advantageous clean slate moving into the closing stage of the sale. So there could be that very, very rare chance that maybe Disney will make a settlement and everything will be done. Because if Disney would settle first before DreamWorks, then everything is over. Just saying. Like, DreamWorks would have no choice but to make a settlement as well. But I think at this point, like, what we're about to see with this case, we need to keep an eye on DreamWorks Animation. Afterwards, we'll just wait and see how it goes. Because DreamWorks is most likely, it has the biggest chance to go out and make a settlement, especially with its new owners. So if that occurs, then we'll have to see what Disney will do with it. Because so far, maybe there could be a chance that this whole case could be done by this year, and everybody decided, okay, we're just going to settle on all this. You know, who knows? Who knows? But there really isn't more to it. Like, maybe there will be more details revealed later in the future, but so far, none has done so. But again, I just want to congratulate the people at Sony for making the right decision to do justice for your animators. You realize the wrongdoings that you have previously done, and now that hopefully, maybe, you can give some fair treatment to your animators in terms of money. You might still have a lot more to work on stuff like morale, or have them be encouraged to work on the stuff that they actually are doing, because I highly doubt any animator would feel excited to work on projects like frickin' The Emoji Movie. Like, oh my god, like, poor, I feel so sorry for those animators. But anyways, yeah, just to say that this is definitely a right step ahead, and yeah, this is all to say congratulations, Sony, for doing the right thing. Now, our next story is going to be about a continuation on the biggest news that happened last week, being the fact that Comcast has purchased DreamWorks Animation. Now, I have previously stated that my biggest fear with it is, what is Comcast going to do with DreamWorks Animation? Are they going to use DreamWorks as the animation studio as it is? Or are they going to use them just for their franchises? They won't even care much about DreamWorks Animation. But it seems that all the worries can go aside, because apparently the answer is that Comcast is using DreamWorks Animation as an animation studio. Looking into my source here from Variety, they're pretty much saying, like going into the quotes here, that, I just need to check who said it. Okay, this is from the CEO of NBC Universal, Steve Bork. He says, the reason why we are here is because we love the animated movie business, and we love the animation, the animated television business, and consumer products, and theme parks, and money, and making a lot of money, and we want you to make us money. Please give us all your freaking money. Nah, okay. Okay, the part with the money I kind of made up, but, like, just the tone that what he says, it just sounds like, oh, we love making movies, and TV shows, and products, and theme parks. It's like, you're just in it for the freaking money. But yeah, it says also here, if you are a student of this business, you know it's very hard to do more than 2 animated films per year as one organization. If we could go from 2 animated films a year to 4 animated films a year by having 2 different parts of our company making those films, that would really advance our desire to be everything we could possibly be in the entertainment business. It also says here from Comcast CEO Roberts. Hold on, there must be a first. Yeah, Brian Roberts. He said, we will absolutely continue to make animated films here. Today for me, Jeffrey, it's the awesome responsibility to trying to find out a way to take your dream and try to carry on your legacy to celebrate it in a way that will make you proud. And keep in mind, the things that I've said from Brian Roberts and Steve Bork, the most important thing is that they didn't say it to the public. They said this more to the employees, what apparently is the over 1,000 workers working at DreamWorks Animation, because they were the ones who are worried the most about their future of what's going to be going on with DreamWorks Animation. Like, this whole change has occurred. What's going to happen? Going more into it, it seems that, yeah, this is going to be the case that Comcast is mostly using them as DreamWorks Animation. It's going to be using them as DreamWorks Animation, the studio. And all the other reports say that it's pretty much correct that Comcast just wants to be like Disney, and they want to have like 2 major animation studios under their belt, where Disney has Walt Disney Animation Studios, the home animation company, and Pixar Animation Studios. Universal pretty much has DreamWorks Animation and Illumination Entertainment, and where Disney has John Lasseter, Universal has Chris Meledandri, who's going to be in charge of both Illumination and DreamWorks. Now, it does make sense, and, honestly, looking at it now, at this point, this could really be advantageous to DreamWorks Animation, because now they'll have a bit less worry if one of their movies would end up flopping, if things don't necessarily go well, because for the longest of times, DreamWorks Animation has been running as an independent studio. They're just relying on companies like Paramount and Fox to just distribute their films. They're just working on the properties by themselves. This is definitely advantageous. So in case they do release another movie that would flop, at least they do have a safety net. They do have something they can rely on so that they don't completely be corrupt. So now they got an actual massive studio that will help them grow. And if it is, like, Comcast wants to really be like Disney, then I could definitely imagine how Illumination and DreamWorks can probably work together in order to have this buddy system to help each other out. Because if you have seen the documentary Imagine Zootopia, you would see how Disney and Pixar would work together in order to make each other films, would make their films fantastic. Like, you would see that they would give each other screenings to their films, and they would give each other notes to explain what works and what doesn't, what needs fixing, and what is perfect for the film. So if Illumination and DreamWorks can definitely work together on that. They can make something fantastic because Illumination is already the kings of, well, not the kings, but I mean, they're the brand new champions of animation. Like, they know how to really make a marketable and, you know, something with massive appeal. They know how to make very appealing animated features. And before any of you guys try to contradict that and you try to say, no, man, no, anime, you're wrong. No, this is all wrong. They make bad movies like Despicable Me. Keep in mind, though, Minions made more than $1 billion. I think that stands as a movie with appeal. However, but yeah, that would be fantastic. And especially that DreamWorks is still able to make great movies. Like, even nowadays, they would still have some good movies under their belt, you know? Like, they've done the How to Train Your Dragon films, they've done the Kung Fu Panda films. I'm sure they got more great tricks up their sleeve in order to make more fantastic features. And if they can even bring in that quality onto Illuminate, like, that amazing quality of animation and also of storytelling onto Illumination, and Illumination would bring in some of the appeal, like, to bring in, like, the massive marketing. Like, I can guarantee you, Illumination has a phenomenal marketing team that they will always remind you about their products no matter what. Like, if they can have, like, the marketing team and also find the appeal to the mass audience about the movie and bring it onto DreamWorks, they can be an amazing dynamic duo. So this could probably work out very well to DreamWorks' advantage, more so than just financially, but maybe even more than in a creative sense. So we'll just have to wait and see with how things go. At this point, I don't really see now that we're going to see this effect. If we are going to see like this form of buddy system, like when we're going to see Comcast DreamWorks animated films, like, that's not gonna happen now. Give it a bit of time. Like, it's not like, okay, after Trolls, we're now going to see the Universal DreamWorks films. It's not gonna happen like that. What is going to happen is that we're going to wait for it to simmer, wait for what's already in production to be done, and then we will fully see the movies that are going, then we are going to see the Comcast DreamWorks movies. It's kind of like what happened when Disney, got the creative heads changed into John Lasseter. Like it didn't immediately happen after Chicken Little. It takes a bit of time. Like, first you got to get through the stuff like the Meet the Robinsons and then Bolt, and then things will seriously pick up once movies like The Princess and the Frog and Tangle got released. So wait until maybe after 2018 when we will see these changes occur. That's when we're going to see the full effect of Illumination and DreamWorks working together and releasing their films. So let's just wait and see what happens. But now I am much more optimistic with what Comcast will do with DreamWorks. And let's hope for the best for DreamWorks Animation's future. Now, for our next story, we have a bit of an interesting discussion. Now, of course, like, I've already done my discussions regarding the future of the wage theft lawsuit and also what DreamWorks, what Comcast will do with DreamWorks. But this time, let's talk about animated films with low budgets. And this is going to be regarding Ratchet and Clank, since that movie was released last week, since the time that I'm doing this podcast right now. Now, apparently, what happened with Ratchet and Clank is that it really sucked. And I don't just mean the movie itself. Like, and almost everybody can agree that it sucked. I just released my review of it not too long ago, and I'm getting a lot of comments from people actually telling me that the games are a lot more better. Like, don't believe the movie is crap, play the games, they're much more better. They're pretty much telling me all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, overall, Ratchet Clank pretty much sucks as a movie, but also how it did financially, it did terribly. It could probably be worse than any other animated film that occurred, Because what happened last week when Ratchet & Clank premiered, it started off in 7th place with $4.8 million at the box office. And just to give you guys a clearer idea of how terrible that it is, Norma the North, when it premiered and when it did its opening box office weekend, it actually made $6.8 million. Imagine how bad it is that you have to do even worse at the box office than freaking Norm of the North. However, with that said, now, yes, what Ratchet & Clank did, it's actually pretty bad. It like, a lot of people would think that, oh, it'll only make, like, okay, so it started off with less than $5 million at the box office. And according, going back into a different article from Cartoon Brew, it says that by the end, it could be possible that in total, it will make domestically between 15 and 20 million. However, does this mean that this is going to be a flop? Actually, no. And here's a little interesting part. And by the way, this is coming from Amid Amidi, the man in charge of Cartoon Brew. Well, at least the big man of Cartoon Brew. To give this a little perspective, a launch in the $5 million range for a film that costs $20 million, and by the way, that's an important thing I forgot to mention, that Ratchet & Clank is actually a very low-budget animated feature that only costs $20 million. $5 million range for a film that costs $20 million is not a flop by any means. We anticipate grosses in the tens of millions for CG animated features because the major studio spends hundreds of millions to produce and advertise those films. But a modest launch for a lower budget film like Ratchet & Clank, combined with a respectable overseas haul, licensing deals, and home video video on demand performance, can be enough to assure its producers an economic success. So by the end of its entire cycle, once it gets released on Blu-ray and once it gets released on video on demand, and with all the licensing stuff, especially with the PS4 game that ties in with it, overall, it's highly possible that Ratchet & Clank could actually end up becoming a hit at the end. It doesn't just have to rely on the big money, like on the big budget money. So it's actually interesting to think about because, like, when you realize it, there's more than it meets the eye when it comes to the performance of a movie. It doesn't just rely on just how much it makes on the box office. It's not like the box office is the only place where it can make money. There's also the merchandising. There's also, like, the Blu-rays and, like, the digital format. That also plays a very key role. And many other factors. It can make a lot of money. It can certainly make its money back. In fact, like, the best that Ratchet & Clank can expect is that it could probably get back its money just by the domestic box office. Like, maybe around the world, it'll probably find a chance to make more. And that does play another big factor, is that considering that it is with Ratchet & Clank, we would, like, There will be more of these kinds of films in the future. Like, if it gets lucky and it does manage to hit $100 million, like, just $100 million at the box office in total, or, like, which could be highly likely, or just even $80 million, then it's going to be for the people that made the Ratchet & Clank film, it's going to be a gigantic success. And they do have more of these kinds of films coming up. They do have something, they have, like, a Sly Cooper movie in the works. We don't know when that specifically is going to be released. Maybe next year, we don't know. But yeah, like, maybe they could find a way. And, you know, it doesn't just explain for Ratchet & Clank, but also for these low-budget animated features as well. Movies like Norm of the North, or even the stop-motion animated features. They usually have a low budget, and they don't really make a lot of money at the box office. But does it change the fact that It's a flop. Nobody's going to care about it. Like, it's a disaster. People are going to lose money. No, that's the reason why people are distributing it. That's why we're still seeing a lot of these films coming out. That's why we're still, that's why Laika is still making movies even to this day. Like, they probably could have just stopped, like, they could have just stopped after Paranorman, but no, they continued on and still find more success with The Box Trolls and maybe with Kubo and the Two Strings as well. But also, like, even with movies like Norm of the North, like, there was a previous podcast that I have done a while back when I mentioned that the people that made Norm of the North, that like they felt so happy with the success that they found. They were delusional. They were crazy enough to think that people were enjoying that movie and all that kind of stuff. But they do have a point, because Norm of the North is pretty cheap. In fact, give me a second here. And let me find you, like, maybe I could find the budget. Actually, hold on a sec. I know what to do here. So, okay, yeah. So, I'm just trying to find the budget for Norm of the North. And going into here, yeah, oh my god. Okay, yeah, it's basically almost as much as Ratchet and Clank. Norm of the North has a budget of $18 million. And at the box office, at least domestically, it made 25. So yeah, the people at Splash Entertainment did make money, and they want to do more stuff with Norm of the North. They have already planned those 45-minute sequels of Norm of the North that would be coming out on DVD and Blu-ray and stuff like that. So this might not be the last time that we'll hear of Norm of the North. Maybe in theaters, but for the people that did make those movies, it's still a hit. So keep in mind, the budget does play a factor financial-wise when it comes to these films. Like, when a movie is low budget and they don't make a lot of money, don't expect it to be a flop. For them, it is a hit. It depends on the perspective of the budget. I mean, sure, we're too used to seeing movies from DreamWorks and Disney and Pixar. They would have budgets that are literally at the nine digit range. Like, they would be like between 100 million or even 200 million. And like that could probably be including even worse, that doesn't even include the budget of the marketing and stuff like that. And even nowadays, like, even when you see a movie that has a budget of $80 million, that's still a buttload, you know? Like, from the major studios, they spend a lot of money, but for small stuff like Ratchet and Clank, the stop-motion animated films, either from Laika or Aardman, or even stuff like Norm of the North, they're pretty much cheap in terms of the budget. But overall, you know, they actually win at the end, because they got, you know, for them, it's a hit. That's pretty much all I'm pretty much saying. That I guess at the end of the day with this is that even though Ratchet and Clank, yeah, it made little to no money at the box office. Well, it made little money at the box office. It's for them, it's going to be a success. Okay, so for our next story, we are going to be looking into an upcoming Blu-ray release, which I'm sure that a lot of people would want to get in their collection. And what I am talking about is going to be Only Yesterday. Now, as you guys probably know, Only Yesterday is the movie by Studio Ghibli made by one of the founders, Isao Takahata. And that was pretty much the only Studio Ghibli film that has yet to have an English dub of it or brought into the US. Beforehand, it was a Japanese exclusive for a long time. And even at that, even if you could go and watch Only Yesterday, you'd only find the Japanese dub and just put up the subtitles. But now, G-Kids decided that in honor of the 25th anniversary of the movie, they just put out the movie for a limited run in theaters, and now they are going to be bringing it on Blu-ray. So, to explain a bit more about what's going on with Only Yesterday, it says here, coming from my source here at Anime News Network that G Kids described the film, it's 1982 and Takeo is 27 years old, unmarried, and has lived her whole life in Tokyo. She decides to visit her family in the countryside, and as the train travels through the night, memories flood back of her younger years. The first immature stirring of romance, the onset of puberty, and the frustrations of math and boys. At the station, she is met by young farmer Toshio, and the encounters with him begin to reconnect her forgotten longings. In lyrical switches between the present and past, Takeo contemplates the arc of her life and wonders if she has been true to her dream, to the dreams of her childhood self. And the G Kids actually did bring in an all-star cast, which includes Daisy Ridley from Star Wars The Force Awakens as Takeo, and also Dev Patel of Slumdog Millionaire playing as Toshio, and they also included Ashley Eckstein of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and also Alison Fernandez from Law and Order SVU. And you know, this is actually pretty exciting, and you know, I'm very optimistic, and I wouldn't have any doubts that Only Yesterday would be a fantastic film. In fact, the people who have seen it, or at least the Japanese dub, they have said that this is definitely fantastic. Like, it is an underrated gem from Studio Ghibli, considering that it's one of the movies that hasn't been released in the US and stuff like that. And especially from the works of Isao Takahata, he has done some works that could almost be equivalent to the ones of Hayao Miyazaki. Keep in mind, like, of course, everybody knows about Grave of the Fireflies, but this is also the man that also brought us Only Yesterday, My Neighbor the Yamadas, Pompoko. I'm trying to think. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, no, wait. Oh, my God. Yeah, I completely forgot. I was thinking if there was something in between, but no. There was that awkward pause after My Neighbor the Yamadas, where he didn't want to do another movie. But yeah, recently he had made his final feature film before eventually decided to retire with The Tale of the Princess Kaguya. So definitely, Isao Takahata is absolutely legit. So my biggest recommendation, and honestly, I would even want to do this for, you know, if I can, then I'll definitely would do this as a Blu-ray review for Filmbook. To do Only Yesterday, and I'm sure that G Kids can do a good job for putting in some great bonus features. It has yet to announce anything of what's going to be going on in the Blu-ray itself, if there's going to be any bonus material, what we're going to learn about this, if we're going to see the history of Only Yesterday, but who knows? It could be pretty interesting. But if you guys want to go and get Only Yesterday, then you'll have to wait on July 5th of this year in order to go and get Only Yesterday on Blu-ray and DVD. And now it's time that we are going to end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. And this one, I gotta say, it's actually a pretty interesting one. And for this week, I have been, you know, I've been juggling with a lot of different stories that could be chosen as Matt's Pick of the Week. Beforehand, I was thinking of the Ratchet and Clank box office story at first, and then I was also thinking, oh, maybe I can also do the Sony story. But no, I decided, you know what, I'm going to fit this one in because I would like to share my thoughts into it. Now, apparently, on Twitter, there is this campaign going on regarding Frozen 2, and this began with a Twitter user named Alexis Isabel, which is actually the campaign to give Elsa a girlfriend for Frozen 2. So what has basically been happening on Twitter is that there was this hashtag called give Elsa a girlfriend, and there has been a total of so far more than 15,000 tweets mentioning it. So just reading some of it here, they would just say, give Elsa a girlfriend because LGBT kids deserve to know there is nothing wrong with them. Give Elsa a girlfriend. Positive queer role model are needed for a young age. Early exposure lead to their better understanding and acceptance. Give Elsa a girlfriend. Making a kids movie with a queer character won't make your kids gay. It will teach them to love, that love comes in many forms. Give Elsa a girlfriend because there is absolutely no representation of any LGBTQ plus people in children's movie and TV. Give Elsa a girlfriend and I will throw so much money at you, Disney. So basically the whole point is mostly to give Elsa a girlfriend as a representation for a character, a part of the LGBT community. And I just want to start off by saying this, that I am a person who 100% believes in equal rights to everyone. Rather it be for race or sexuality, everybody deserves everything that they can. Everybody deserves to have a happy life. That's the best way to put it. And in terms of sexuality and stuff like that, it doesn't matter who the other person is. It doesn't matter, like, it can be much more than just a boy or a girl. As long as it's one person who loves another, then it's perfectly fine. It's all right. It is their lives. It is their choice. And that's the lives that they want to go. So good for them. If they want, like, if this makes them happy, then they will be happy. But if you're going to sit there and tell me that Elsa needs a girlfriend in Frozen 2, you're out of your freaking mind! Are you freaking insane, people? No! Just freaking no! This is just, oh my god, just thinking about it is literally insane. And I know that Disney has done this before. They have previously introduced some gay characters. There was a lesbian lesbian couple in the TV show? Good Luck Charlie or something like that. They introduced a queer couple there, a lesbian couple there. Sorry, I don't know. I don't feel comfortable saying queer for some reason. But also, there was also in Once Upon a Time, apparently, where I recently learned that Mulan hooked up with Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, which still sounds weird if you're not a Once Upon a Time fan. It's like, what kind of fan fiction are they writing? But yeah, like, Disney cannot take what is essentially their most popular Disney character, who is now as equivalently a pop culture icon as much as Mickey Mouse and Tinkerbell, and make her a gay character. The thing is that she's too marketable to be gay. That's the whole point. Disney wants to make sure that everybody is happy. Is everybody going to be happy with the decision that Elsa is gay? No. That's the problem. Then Disney is not going to do it. And here's my massive problem with this. All right, now, with every single explanation that they gave, the one problem that I have, is that they did not answer a legitimate question about this. Okay, why does Elsa need a girlfriend? And I don't mean for the LGBT community, I don't mean any of that, I mean in the movie, I mean for Elsa. Why does Elsa need a girlfriend? Or why does Elsa need a romantic partner in general? Not just a girlfriend, but a boyfriend. Why does she need a romantic partner? Why? Because the thing is with Frozen is that the important, like, one of the biggest themes is sister love. It doesn't necessarily tap into romance. You know, it, like, yeah, like, the thing is that the people who are saying it, the people who are doing the hashtag give Elsa a girlfriend, like, they don't care, like, they don't necessarily care about animated films or stuff like that. I still see that disrespect that animation is for kids, and they even say, like, oh, give Elsa a girlfriend because we need a gay representative of kids' movies. It's like, no, you're a freaking idiot. And the thing she doesn't need a romantic partner because she has Anna. She has she has a sister. Anna and Elsa are currently the biggest representation of, of sister love. And if you do need romance, you got Anna and Kristoff. Elsa can do fine on her own. It's about accepting herself. In fact, there are some people who already claim that Elsa is kind of like they would do theories that Elsa is a representation of a gay character, considering this is about one's accepting of oneself, where her ice powers is represented as her sexuality. Now, I don't normally believe these things, but the thing is, it's been done. Like, if that is true, then it's been done. Like, Elsa is already happy with herself. She doesn't even show she doesn't show anything how she can be, like, why she needs a boyfriend, why she needs a romantic partner. If anything, like, she still has, like, if there's anything that we have seen from the animated short Frozen Ever After, is that, you know, she doesn't need, she's still learning about her powers. She still doesn't know the capabilities of what she has. Apparently, when she sneezes, she makes little marshmallow men. That's the thing. But I will say, however, that, you know, I was completely against this. Now, I actually discussed this with a friend of mine regarding if this is a good idea or not, and she told me that she was all for it, and she did give me some very good points on it, how this could be in the similar veins of Zootopia, of how it could really emphasize the message of accepting oneself, not just about being gay, but just, you know, accepting who you are in general and how others can cooperate with it, how others can accept who you are as well. You know, and it does bring up some good points, but I feel like it's just too risky. Like, the thought in my mind that it's way too risky for Disney to go and make Elsa gay. And honestly, I feel like the people who are doing that, they're doing it for kind of their own selfish needs. They're not doing it for Elsa. They're not doing it for Disney. They're not doing it for animation. I mean, like I previously stated, the people doing the hashtag give Elsa a girlfriend, they just want a gay representative for kids' films. That's it. You know, and the thing is with Elsa, she's the most popular icon, so let's make her gay. And no, like, honestly, if you're going to make Elsa gay, that's going to only ruin her reputation, and it's going to seriously damage, it's going to damage the Frozen image, really, and that's the biggest problem. It's way too much of a risk for Disney to make Elsa a lesbian and give her a girlfriend. Honestly, the better way to do this is if Disney would make an original film and make the main character gay. You know, like, if they would go and release Moana and they would reveal that Moana is gay, then I'll be fine with it. I'll accept it with open arms, and I'll applaud Disney for doing that. And I'll applaud Disney for actually making a big step and giving a gay, like, making their main character gay, you know, and on top of that, making a Disney princess gay. So a very, very marketable person that everybody can look up to and is also gay, you know, they can do that as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be like a Disney princess, but the thing is that if you want a gay character to appear in a movie, you have to do it in an original animated feature. You can't do something with a property that already exists. You know, it's only going to make things worse. It makes no sense whatsoever. Now, whether if Disney is going to do that or not, I don't know. But honestly, I just feel like it's way too much of a risk, especially for one of their biggest franchises that's currently going on. So honestly, I believe that Disney should probably play it safe. And instead of just making a gay character, that's not what I mean. Instead of just making Elsa gay, then they should probably create a new character to be gay. You know, like, it's like if they make making Elsa gay is like making Mickey Mouse gay. You get what I mean? It's a little bit like that. But anyways, that is all that I've got for this week, so thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work on film-book.com, just search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. If you listen to this episode on iTunes or any other podcast service, then do us a little favor and go and rate and review this episode. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on this week's news. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!